Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, July 19th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, I would ask how you're doing, but I'm kind of assuming you might be still reeling a bit from Italy's defeat of England in the Euro. Is that true?
We could call it being a little hungover.
Yeah, understood. So as always, Carnegie Mellon is kind enough, the Tepper School of Business, to sponsor this podcast. So we're going to hear a little bit more about Tepper and then get into it. Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program, according to U.S. News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of three formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's T-E-P-P-E-R. So, Alex, what's been going on the MBA admissions front? I feel like there's not a ton to report, especially because we're recording this episode a little bit earlier than we normally do, but anything that you want to like call our attention to?
No, I think there was a little bit of movement off the wait list last week, just little bits. But we'll see that type of activity again, and we've talked about this on several occasions. We'll still see some of that activity over the the month of July, and I assume preterms generally begin sort of beginning August, sort of early August. So once that part of the calendar comes around, things should be pretty firmed up, but there's still a little bit of movement.
Yeah, and you've actually just reminded me, this is something that I didn't know when I applied to business school and really not until I got in, but most business schools will start, like you're saying, in early August with like usually several weeks of orientation type stuff. And it's not all required, but a lot of it is, really fun and a great way to meet your classmates. I mean, some of it's kind of designed to get you up to speed for the core curriculum. Some of it's for international students to get settled and, do what they need to sort of, arrive in a new country and get bank accounts and all that kind of stuff set up. But there's just a lot of cool activities. And, most schools have at least a week of mandatory stuff right before school starts. But I just want to mention that because if you're applying to business school, you want to think in terms of like, okay, I'll probably be relocating in late July if I'm, going to be moving for school. And I had always thought, oh, it's like September. It starts in September, like any college or school might. But there's this early stuff. So I just want to point that out for folks.
No, it makes a lot of sense. Early stuff. And it's like you say, just having observed it, not being part of it, but it just looks like a lot of fun to make the most of it.
Yeah, totally. Because there's no pressure with classes yet, or the classes you're taking are kind of just, designed to kind of get you up to speed. So a lot of fun. I did want to mention MIT Sloan and Carnegie Mellon Tepper have released their essay topics. And so we posted our ETAs, our essay topic analyses of both of those programs on the website. So be sure to check that out if you're applying to those programs. I also know... go ahead.
Just on that score, Graham.
Yeah.
Very interesting from Sloan. For the last couple of years, several years maybe, they've had this sort of... one sort of cover letter essay. You apply. There's a decision on whether to interview you or not. And then if you're invited for an interview, you get to write another essay. So they're the only school that sort of does that. They've now expanded that to two essays. And the second essay is a very sort of a big hat tip to the importance of data driving decisions. I just think it's really interesting how MIT is sort of taking a slightly different approach to its peer schools in this regard.
Yeah, in fact, I think the only school that does something that you could say is maybe somewhat in the ballpark of it is, Harvard has, after you've interviewed, you write a short kind of, kind of your your take on...
It's a reflection thing.
Yeah, the reflection, yeah.
But quite honestly, I wouldn't put that in the same bucket because frankly, after you've interviewed with any school, you need to send some kind of acknowledgement of
true
of thanks and so on and so forth. Harvard's just formalizing it and making it a deliberate part of the admissions process. But this, I think, Graham, anyway, this is quite a different approach.
Yeah.
And to add a second essay to that stage and only have one essay, that cover letter essay on the front end, yeah, it's super interesting.
Well, you know what I think, and I think that schools could move increasingly in this direction, and MIT's always been kind of at the forefront when it comes to sort of admissions innovations. They were actually the first school to have a completely digital application, which you probably remember, but I think that the beauty of this is that just from a pure like operations standpoint, it means that they're spending more time on the people who've made that initial cut. And so they're basically saying like, why read three essays from someone who we're not even going to invite to interview? You know, so I feel like, you know, they're just backloading the process to get more out of the candidates that they're really interested in, which makes sense to me. You know, you could argue that you shouldn't probably ask for recommendation letters until, or maybe ask for one up front and maybe one later. So like you could do a lot of things to backload this process, I think. So it's interesting to see them do that.
The counter argument is front loading the process allows you to make better decisions on who to interview.
Right. No, I know. It's tricky.
So I see the argument either way. I support what Sloan's doing, don't get me wrong, but I do see both points of view.
Absolutely. So stay tuned. I know that I've been telling you, Alex, I've been recording these kind of separate podcast episodes that are admissions director Q&As, and I've done a whole bunch of them now, and they're going to be trickling out. In fact, as you listen to this episode, there may already be one or two of them out there, but I've had a chance to sit down with admissions directors from Columbia, Wharton, Harvard, and others. So yeah, stay tuned on that front. The other thing is that this week on Wednesday, July 21st at noon Eastern, I'll be emceeing another one of our Essay Insight workshops, and this week I get to sit down with admissions directors from Duke Fuqua, UT Austin McCombs, Dartmouth Tuck, Cornell Johnson, and Michigan Ross. So another amazing lineup following last week's workshop. So yeah, lots to kind of be excited about, and if you haven't signed up yet for that event or any of our Essay Insight workshops, you can do so by going to bit.ly/clearadmit. Essay Insight, and that's all one word, all lowercase. So stay tuned for that. Alex will continue to do Clubhouse time slots on Thursdays at noon Eastern. So if you're using the Clubhouse app, you can come on board and chat with Alex and me. And yeah, so lots to kind of lots of opportunities to interact.
Just in case anyone's confused, Graham, the fact that you didn't tell us how excited you were for the first of these essay workshops is it is in fact being conducted in 2 days' time. We had to pre-record this podcast
right
about a week or two early or whatever, just yeah, because of travel schedules. Just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
I imagine the first essay workshop will be absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
But we don't actually know that yet.
Yeah. So anyway, stay tuned. You can sign up for those essay workshops. It'll be a lot of fun. If you have questions and don't want to post on the site or call in on Clubhouse, you can always send us an email, info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps and Alex and I will get back to you. Alex, I think that's all I had so far. I know you picked out a handful of ApplyWire entries that we're going to go through as we get into the wiretaps portion. But is there anything else that you wanted to add before we do that?
No, let's kick on.
All right, this is Wiretaps Candidate Number 1. So this is an applicant who is thinking of targeting, fall 22. There's a bit of the reason I'm pausing there is because this person's not 100% sure when they want to apply, but they've got 5 target schools on the list, and those are Harvard, MIT, Stanford, Wharton, and Yale. The person's been working in consulting, and they, I guess, want to get into entrepreneurship or nonprofit social impact type work. They have a 3.11 on the GRE and a 3.97 GPA. They've been working for 3.5 years. They're currently in the UK, and that's where things get a little complicated because this is an African woman who had been working for a Big Four firm and I guess in risk advisory and stuff, and basically was just seized an opportunity to go to the UK and take a new job in strategy consulting. And so her question to us is, I think she wants a bit of an assessment of her candidacy, but she's also wondering, gosh, now that I've taken this new opportunity, does that throw a wrench into the works of applying to business school, which had originally been her plan? And so there was some debate on the website, but Alex, I'll kind of let you take it from here because this is a complicated issue. And I know my understanding is that this UK job that she's taken wasn't in the cards originally. And so she's wondering, like, what do I do now kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a few things at play here. One is, I mean, obviously she's got a 3.11 on the GRE, but she's going to retake that. She's got a 3.97 GPA. She's obviously well thought of at work. She's now got a role at McKinsey, which is no easy matter. So clearly, there's a lot of upside with this candidate, female from Africa. She's done some entrepreneurship and social stuff in Africa to this point, and done lots of really cool things. So the advice that she's been given is actually, assuming that she does update that GRE score, she's qualified enough now to go off to a top tier business school to then execute on her goals going forward, which is social innovation. And she does clearly look like the sort of person that has those goals that are ambitious, yet impactful, yet realistic based on her background and so on and so forth. So I would reckon that some of the advice she's received is spot on. Maybe she could actually go and do what she wants to do with her current profile, plus the better GRE score. Now, the wrinkle becomes, now that she's at McKinsey, she's either, you know, needs to apply this year and just get out of McKinsey and continue on with the path that she'd already sort of laid out for herself, or remain at McKinsey for several years, because then she's sort of pursuing some kind of residency status in the UK while she's working for McKinsey in London. Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. So that just adds another wrinkle. It's either, should I apply this year or should I apply in 3 years? So if she ultimately has this McKinsey experience and applies in 3 years, I don't see this in any way having a negative impact on her overall candidacy. Obviously, having the additional experience in strategy management, strategy consulting at the top branded firm in the world, or at least one of the three top, depending on who you ask, but McKinsey is kind of like the Harvard of strategy consulting, right? Mm-hmm. So, at the end of the day, Graham, if she retakes the GRE, she's got two choices, and either pathway is probably going to set her up for what she wants to do with business school and with the post-business school set of goals. So my advice, based on that, was reasonably straightforward. Apply this year, see what your options are, and then if you, the options that you get aren't exactly ideal, then wait the 3 years and apply with the McKinsey experience. Mm-hmm. Just focusing a little bit more, maybe in that 3 years time, on the why now aspect, making sure that you show fit, fully engaged, and so on and so forth, i.e. overcoming some of the issues that sometimes an older candidate has to face in terms of making sure their profile makes a lot of sense for that school. She's targeting Harvard, Sloan, Stanford, Wharton, Yale. And again, GRE aside, I think she absolutely should be targeting these types of programs.
Yeah, I guess so. I had a couple of things on this. Number one, I did want to mention that in the notes this person wrote that just wanted to start off by saying I'm a huge fan of the podcast and a regular guest in the Clubhouse room. Y'all do an absolutely fantastic job. So we always appreciate those kind of compliments. Thanks for that. But Alex, how do you, this person, she says that she's at a top tier strategy house. So I guess, I don't know if you have inside info here, but I guess it must be one of those McKinsey, Bain, BCG type places.
Oh, I thought she said McKinsey. Maybe I misspoke.
Either way, I think when someone says top tier strategy house doing strategy consulting, it's got to be, you know, one of those types of firms. And the fact that she was working at a big four before, It makes sense, right? And so in any event, whether it's McKinsey or Bain or whoever it might be, I think the points still remain. I am concerned about the GRE, but as you say, she's retaking it. I think she's well aware that, you know, the schools on her target list are going to be more in the kind of mid 320s, or at least getting across that 320 mark to get into play. So there's some work to be done there. I don't have a problem with her, as you say, applying now, see what happens, and then she can always wait a bit and apply down the road after she's had some more experience in this current role. It does sound like an interesting opportunity, and you know, as you said, there might be some residency benefits by staying at the company in London. So in any event, I think, feel like she has the best of both worlds, and that she has this great new job. She can retake the GRE, see how that goes, and then apply to school this year and see how, you know, see where the chips fall, kind of thing. But I agree there's a lot to like, and I particularly like the international aspect, you know, someone making their way from like Africa to the UK. Like, that's just not something you see as often in terms of like someone having, you know, two different sort of sets of experiences in different markets. So there's a lot to like.
Yeah, and I guess the McKinsey thing, I got confused. That's our second candidate. Sorry about that. But yeah, top strategy firm. Maybe McKinsey might be one of several others, but it's a great, she's obviously got a great opportunity right now.
Yep, makes sense. All right, well, thanks for that post, and thanks to that poster for joining us on Clubhouse and you know, just being a part of the show today. So in any event, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is a candidate targeting fall 22. This person has only three schools on the target list, and they are MIT Sloan, Chicago Booth, and Wharton. They've been working in management consulting for McKinsey, in this case. They also have some oil and gas experience, and in fact, their McKinsey work they're doing now is in that sector. They were hired from oil and gas into McKinsey specifically for that type of work. After business school, they would love to get into private equity or asset management, hedge funds, but they want to keep that focus on oil and gas. So they think that there's a lot to be done on the finance side of the industry, but they don't have that background in terms of their education or even work experience. So they want an MBA to get it. GMAT score 750. GPA is a 3.4. This person's been working for 6 years. They're located in Houston, Texas. And yeah, they have worked at McKinsey, as I say. So what do you make of this? Because I know they have a limited number of target schools, which they claim is because they really want to learn finance, and they think those three schools are the place to go. But what do you make of their goals and the whole package here?
They picked up Arabic language as a hobby and play four instruments. I mean, what kind of person is this, Graham?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. A talented person.
Yes, that's my point.
Yeah.
Super talented. If you know, not that there's anything wrong with picking up Arabic as a hobby, but I've got to imagine that's quite a difficult thing to accomplish as a hobby.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, quite honestly, Graham, I mean, I'm sure you mentioned it, 750 on the GMAT 2. I think there's just lots and lots and lots to like about this candidate. Much like the first candidate, barring the GRE score, there's a lot to like about this candidate. And I would imagine that they've done well at their work. They started off directly in the oil and gas industry. They then went to McKinsey as a researcher specializing in oil and gas. And now they've sort of gone to the front side of McKinsey in sort of strategy consulting in oil and gas. So obviously, I think it's all signals that this is a high achiever who's well sought after and so on and so forth. So I'm sure they're going to have no problem showing that impact and other things that top schools will be looking for. So quite frankly, Graham, I think this is sort of candidate could be applied to any school that they choose to apply, or should apply to all the top schools that fit their goals. The one question that we have, and we discussed this before we came online, is their choice of Sloan, Booth, and Wharton. And you said, Alex, this makes perfect sense. These are the most rigorous finance programs on the planet. And yeah, I can't disagree with that. I mean, you experienced one of them, and I'm sure that makes sense. My question back though is, if private equity is part of the aspiration of this candidate, should Harvard and Stanford also be in the mix in terms of where they should be targeting, Graham?
Yeah, it's a good question. And the other thing that's interesting is that if you think about investment and hedge funds and PE, I kind of think Columbia comes up too as another school that could be on the list. I think particularly as a school that has a really strong reputation in finance and for that kind of rigor, and particularly, in investing and things like that, Columbia is strong. So this is, I kind of grapple with this because on the one hand, this candidate, we talked about how their career plan is a little different, right? I mean, it has that thread of oil and gas, but they really are looking to make quite the pivot. Right now, they've been working in oil and gas, they've been doing research in that domain and consulting, but to jump over and do investing and finance or private equity type stuff, that's like a kind of a different animal, right? And so, it's going to require some careful crafting of the story. And, I would love to know, for example, how do they do an undergrad and what's the kind of track record for quantitative coursework on their transcript? Because you could see them much more easily laying out a story of, I love this sector, this McKinsey experience has been fantastic, and now I want to get an MBA and springboard into kind of a senior role with an oil and gas entity. Or a renewable, entity, just something in the energy sector, but more on the management side. Whereas on the finance side, it's going to be a little bit of a harder sell, right? So I guess we're talking about two things here. Is like, one, what's the right set of schools given this candidate's stated career plan? And I agree with you, Harvard and Stanford make sense for private equity, and maybe even Columbia, so that they could cast a wider net. But these are all really hard schools to get into, so they have to keep that in mind. And then the other piece, though, is, is there an easier way to pitch their kind of plan that maybe is less finance-oriented? Would that be more kind of feasible or palatable to the admissions team? So I don't know what you think about that, because we normally tell people to go for what they want, and state your goals that, as they are.
Mm.
But I just wonder about this one.
Yeah, I mean, my question back to the candidate initially was just make sure the goals are realistic,
mm-hmm.
based not just on the schools you're applying. Obviously, these schools, they're top schools, so they should be able to allow the right candidate to execute in whichever direction they want. But the question is this the right candidate for pursuing private equity, for example? We know that's a very difficult industry to break into. What sort of networks is she bringing to the table, and so on and so forth? And whether, if that's the case, and maybe thinking, well, private equity might not be the first thing I need to be pursuing straight out of MBA. Maybe it's a bit of a stint in investment banking, and then moving into the sort of the investing side. And so, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So just be, you bring up a really important point, but I think this is pretty critical for this particular candidate. Make sure the goals are realistic, because everything else about this candidate just screams to me that she belongs in a top school.
Yeah, because, you mentioned that she's picked up Arabic and, plays four instruments. She also noted that she was the only woman in the first cohort of her undergrad's energy management program, and that she grew up internationally.
Right.
So, she's just ticking so many different boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the candidacy. I just want to make sure that if she, classic case would be, if she were to waltz into a PE fund today and drop her resume on the table and have an interview, what would the reaction be? I mean, that's always a good kind of litmus test. And if she thinks, hey, they would look and see how much exposure I've had to the sector and they would snatch me up in a minute. Or if she thinks, well, they'd look at, my industry exposure, but then ask me what I know about finance and say, we can't do it. So that's the gap that might exist. And I think it's possible, obviously, to fill that gap by going to business school, right? But I just encourage her to think a little bit about, what's the admissions officer going to be able to, look at and say, oh, this is, no brainer. This will be an easy transition for this person. So, and again, I think adding some of those schools that we discussed, or at least giving them a close look makes a lot of sense too. And even seeing like how active are their energy clubs and PE clubs and stuff, you can get a good sense for what's going on these campuses by looking at that stuff.
Very good.
So let's move on. I obviously thank that person for her post and wish her the best of luck. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is another ApplyWire entry that we received from someone who wants to start school in the fall of 22, and they have 6 schools on their target list, and those schools are Carnegie Mellon, Emory, Indiana, Kellogg, UT Austin, and UVA Darden. This person's been working in nonprofit and education, and they would love to get into consulting or tech after business school. They've got Accenture, Bain, BCG, and Deloitte on that short-term post-MBA target list. GRE score is a whopping 332, and the GPA is a 3.1. They've been working for 7 years. They're located in the USA, and I had to laugh because they said, I always thought I'd kind of rot away at my current work location and retire a comfortable middle class, but the lack of challenge in the job is dulling my mind and driving me crazy. And so they're looking to kind of, you know, go to another level and be challenged.
You might be laughing at that sentence, Graham, but please don't encourage them to use that as their opening sentence in their goals essay.
No.
Because that will mean that the reader just won't bother reading any further, let me tell you.
No, yeah. I would not pitch it that way, but I think it's just interesting. And I think it's, you know, it's true for a lot of people. They might be saying, look, I could stay in my job and I make okay money and, you know, let that be that, right? But I think a lot of what we see, and we talk about ambition, you know, MBA candidates that get in have a lot of ambition. And so moving to the next level is, you know, what this person wants to do. They mentioned that demographically they're East Asian, which you and I talked about what that means. It's, you know, typically someone from East Asia would be Japan, North Korea, South Korea, Taiwan, China, maybe Mongolia, right? So there's a handful of countries that they could be from. They are LGBTQ plus as well, which they explain was a reason or partly drove their low GPA, because they had some trouble, you know, just they said they withdrew into themselves a little bit while they were in undergrad, as they had this kind of identity crisis. So, you know, the last thing I want to mention about this candidate before I ask you your total kind of view on it is they mentioned that they've taken more than half a semester's worth of college level courses since graduation with better results. They have a 3.8 in those courses. They also said they've done some MOOCs and then certificates in analytics and data science, project management, etc. So they're just wondering, you know, what does this GPA mean as they approach the application process? And then B, given their list of schools, have they left any school out that would allow them to get into consulting, which is their goal in the short term, and they obviously want to make sure they apply to enough schools to where, or at least where they have a school, at least a school or two on the list that they have really good odds of getting into. So I'll leave it there. What do you make of this candidacy?
Yeah, I mean, the first point that I wanted to address, we've already addressed. You know, this notion that you're kind of potentially rotting away somewhere and you know, in this sort of whatever, just don't make sure that's not your pitch in your application in any way, shape or form, because that could be misconstrued even if you have your perspective, it doesn't matter. It's just the perception of the readers might take things a little bit differently and therefore might dismiss everything else that they read.
Yeah.
So be careful about that. The 3.1 GPA clearly is a little bit of an outlier in context of the rest of the candidacy. And you can see it's explained, Graham, you know, they're part of the LGBTQ community. This was a real challenge for them during their undergraduate studies, that sort of identity issues and so on and so forth. Obviously, someone like myself, I can't really have empathy for that because, you know, I've never faced those kinds of challenges. But I could imagine that can be really overbearing. And I'm not sure in terms of culturally being in East Asia during this time, whether there's more stigma attached versus less. Anywhere around the world, it's going to be stressful experience. I'm absolutely certain of that.
Yeah, good point.
Even if I can't have the empathy. So that might actually make good fodder for one of the essays, you know, overcoming challenges or various other things in terms of essay material, or if not, should at least be addressed somewhat succinctly in the optional essay. Taking the additional courses, even if it's just a sort of collection of courses and so on and so forth, that's very good. The 3.32 GPA, GRE is absolutely fantastic. So I don't think the ADCOM is going to have any doubts to the two core issues here. One is being academically prepared, and secondly, having that academic motivation. So I think that stuff should be fine. It looks like even though their work has allowed them to think they might end up rotting away, they actually did some pretty good things at work in terms of sort of performance and so on and so forth. I think should look good. And you know, they've been advising some startups and stuff, and they really enjoyed that. So again, that stuff I think can look good. I gotta say, and you know, they're a travel photographer. I don't know what it really means by saying I have 50 million plus views on my photos, but that does sound like a lot to me, Graham. And I sort of equate that maybe to a niche blogger who has a nice following or something like that. That's probably adds a little bit of color to the profile. Mm-hmm. So again, with this super GRE, some of this other stuff looks pretty decent. They want to go into consulting. With consulting, the better the program you get into, the better your opportunities. Absolutely. You know, so top programs, more access to MBB. Slightly further down the scale, it's tier two, whatever, consulting and so on and so forth. I don't think they're necessarily being overly ambitious with their target schools. I mean, obviously, they've got Kellogg in there, and that's one of the best consulting houses on the planet, or business schools for consulting on the planet. So you know, you could argue maybe Kellogg's their reach, but I might encourage them to maybe consider whether it's one more M7 or a couple more top 16 in their mix, just to sort of make sure they hit that as their target schools. Maybe that's what they should do, Graham.
Yeah, it's interesting because on the one hand, the list of schools they have is, you know, I mean, there's a nice range of kind of admissions difficulty. But I think you could argue that other than Kellogg, you know, the schools are sort of clustered more in the kind of, you know, 12 to 20 sort of range or 12 to 25 kind of range. So, yeah, that is an interesting thought. The one thing that jumped out at me was, I don't know if they've looked at it, but the UNC Kenan Flagler MBA program is one that fits in with the types of schools on their list, but also is pretty noted for consulting placements and has a special concentration around strategy consulting that candidates can pursue and that apparently employers really like. So that's one that I would maybe take a peek at. I think that the GPA will be of concern, and that's why, obviously throwing in a whole bunch of M7 schools onto the list or something might be a little bit risky just given, you know, that GPA. But I feel like they can, as you say, use the optional essay to explain that they took some outside coursework, have done better, and that the part of the reason for the low GPA was related to their struggles with their identity and stuff. So, and I know admissions officers are very well attuned to that stuff, and you know, I think it'll probably be, a really acceptable kind of, I don't want to say excuse, but an acceptable explanation, right, for what happened. So I feel like, you know, again, as long as they learn how to sort of pitch what it is that they're, why they're leaving their current job and what they want to do, everything should go well. And I think, you know, they have what seems to be a really interesting background. And I too was kind of struck by that travel photographer thing. And I think this gives us a chance to talk a little bit about how when you're an admissions officer and you're assembling the class, you know, not only are you making sure that people are going to thrive academically and that they have logical goals, they're going to go on and get a job when they're done with the MBA, but you're also looking to figure out like, okay, when I admit this student, what are they going to do on campus and what roles can they take on? Because a lot of these MBA programs are totally student driven in terms of all the outside activities. And so, you know, it could be that this person ends up being a photographer for the student newspaper or for different events that happen, conferences or treks that, you know, students go on. So it's always nice to be able to identify a candidate that has a hobby and you're like, okay, I know what they're going to be doing when they get here. So they have that. They can sort of tick that box too. Presumably maybe they would even join any kind of LGBTQ plus, you know, clubs or whatever type of activity might be happening there. So there are a number of things you could sort of see this person doing on the campuses of these programs. And that helps in my view. So I like the candidacy. GPA is, again, not ideal, but the GRE will help, and I think an explanation should get them the rest of the way there, particularly for the schools on their list. I don't know if you agree with that.
No, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that takes us through. We've done our three posts for this week. I know I need to get back on ApplyWire and start answering some people's questions, and we did get a couple of listener emails over the last few days that we'll get back to as well. But in any event, thanks for picking these out, Alex, and we'll be back in 1 week's time with another episode of Wiretaps.
Very good. Best of luck, everyone. Stay safe.